The Guardian.
Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. Shelley's poem Ozymandias, otherwise known as the ancient Egyptian pharaoh Ramses II, has become shorthand for transience, for how time mocks the vanity of kings. Build temples, towers and statues to yourself, but in the end it will all turn to dust. We are food for worms. Ripeness is all. But I have a feeling that Ramses has the last laugh. There are only two kinds of immortality, and he achieved both. More than 3,000 years after his death, he still has fame, thanks to Shelley and others, and can be seen mummified in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. He was also the father of more than 100 children, so may have had the deathbed consolation that his bloodline would continue in perpetuity. Nelson Mandela seems certain to achieve cultural immortality, at least for as long as there are libraries, DVD players, and peoples of the world yearning for democracy. A new book, Conversations with Myself, a Beatles anthology-style scrapbook of diaries, letters, and interviews, is already a bestseller. But like Ramses, South Africa's first black president seems assured of genetic immortality too. His descendants are numerous and various, carrying the Mandela name in many walks of South African life. Some of them came together last week for the official launch of Conversations with Myself at the Market Theatre in Johannesburg. Mandela's second and third wives, Winnie Madikizela Mandela and Graca Machel, sat side by side in the audience. Among the guests on stage, interviewed by the veteran actor John Carney, were Mandela's daughter, Zinzi, and his great-grandson, Luvuyo. The event gave a more intimate glimpse of Mandela the man than Mandela the stone King of Kings. Zinzi, 49, recalled trips with her mother, Winnie, to visit her father during his imprisonment on Robben Island. Winnie would tell her never to cry, so as to deny the enemy any satisfaction. They would often travel on the ferry in silence. "Every time we went to see him on Robben Island, he was sitting down behind a glass partition," Zinzi recalled. "For a very long time I wondered how tall he was, because it was very important for me how tall my father was, and I'd never seen him stand up." She added, "The first time I touched him was something I cannot describe. He wanted to be affectionate, but at the same time he didn't want to be too emotional. I felt intense emotion at the time." With Nelson Mandela permanently absent, and Winnie in and out of prison, the teenage Zinzi poured her heart into poetry that was to move her father. "A tree was chopped down, and the fruit was scattered. I cried, because I had lost a family, the trunk, my father, the branches, his support, so much, the fruit, the wife and children, who meant so much to him, tasty, loving as they should be, all on the ground, some out of his reach, in the ground, the roots, happiness, cut off from him." Luvuyo Mandela is the grandson of Thembekile, Nelson Mandela's son from his first marriage to Evelyn Mays. Thembekile was killed in a car accident in 1969. Mandela's acerbic and futile plea to attend the funeral is contained in the book. Luvuyo, 24, is the same age that his grandfather was when he died. He said he has two distinct memories of meeting Nelson Mandela. One of meeting a strange man in a hotel room, the second in Cape Town. It was the first time Luvuyo had been allowed to skip school. He recalled, "My mum just came down and said on Thursday and Friday, you're not going to school. We're going to Cape Town to see your great-grandfather, and I thought this man must be very important." To be a Mandela in South Africa today is to be a Kennedy in America, or a Prince William or Harry in Britain. John Carney, who narrates the CD version of the new book, wondered about that burden. Luvuyo replied, "It has its moments where there's a fair amount of pressure, where you're expected to rise above your peers. It's got its benefits. I'm a 24-year-old speaking to people who otherwise would not lend me their ear. So it's an experience. It's a fraction of what I believe he went through every day." Luvuyo, an ambassador for the charity Cheese Kids for Humanity, continued, "In terms of my life in the Mandela role, I know nothing else. I guess it has its moments. You just rise to the occasion when you can. Whenever you fall short, you reach out to the family for support, which you have. We've been blessed by wonderful women who, when Nelson Mandela was in prison, took care of the family. We exist today because of them." Perhaps the most prominent Mandela to emerge of late is Nelson's grandson, Mandla, who appears media-friendly, politically ambitious, and not without controversy. There are fears that when the 92-year-old former president dies, competing factions of the family will wage a bitter struggle for his legacy. Some of Mandela's children have complained that his devotion to politics was so consuming that he neglected them, even after he emerged from jail. But no one wanted to press that subject too closely at last week's book launch. Instead, the mood was warm, restrained, and reverential. With a twist. After the final vote of thanks and ripple of applause, a colourfully dressed woman sitting behind me rose to her feet and roared a lung-bursting hymn of praise in the Xhosa language. All heads spun round to look at her, at first expressing bewilderment or alarm, then slowly melting into smiles and amusement. It was an African celebration that stood in sharp contrast to the very conventionally Western English-language talk show that had just gone before. Later, over a drink, a South African remarked to me that Mandela, 1994, and democracy were all very well, but they had been on Western terms. Below the surface, there was an African cry, still waiting to be answered.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.